It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Obama is crediting strong American diplomacy for key milestones with Iran in recent hours, including confirmation that Tehran had significantly rolled back its nuclear program, released American prisoners, and resolved a three-decade-old financial dispute. Portland State University scholar Peter Bechtol told VOA the Iran deal is a good one, benefiting everyone, and that it comes with a domestic component.
In this case, both in Iran and in the United States, there are hardliners in Iran, there's a moderate president, and the supreme guide, Grand Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has to balance the two. Similar in the United States, as we all know, we have an administration that at the top very much believes in diplomacy rather than brute force in dealing with Iran and some other countries. And we have an opposition, especially among people running for the White House later this year, who seem to be much more hawkish.
An Obama administration official said Sunday the long and difficult diplomatic process to negotiate the Iran nuclear deal opened channels of communication for the first time in decades and new opportunities for the United States and for Iran to engage on other key matters. White House issued a sharply worded statement on Sunday saying it condemns in the strongest terms attacks in the capital of Burkina Faso that killed at least 29 people, wounded scores of others overnight Friday. The statement also warned that the acts of terrorism will not stop the United States from helping improve health care and increase economic opportunities for the people of Burkina Faso. This is VOA News. United States is looking for three U.S. contractors who were reportedly kidnapped in Baghdad. There are no details of their identity or what their jobs are in Iraq, but many different companies are working in Iraq on both security and civilian projects. Dozens of foreigners have been kidnapped in Iraq over the past few months by terrorists and militias helping Iraqi forces battle the Islamic State militants. Freelance Yemeni journalist Amigdad Mojalli was killed Sunday at an air raid by a Saudi-led coalition on rebel-held Sana'a while on assignment for the Voice of America. Mojalli had been reporting for VOA since October, focusing on human impact of the war and the economic crisis in Yemen, often seeking out the most vulnerable victims. VOA has expressed its deepest condolences to the family of Amigdad Mojalli, and Reporters Without Borders continues to report that at least five journalists were killed in Yemen last year. Taiwan's voters have elected Tsai Ing-wen as the first female president, delivering a crushing defeat to the Nationalist Party. Tsai's independence-leaning Democratic Progressive Party also won a majority in the legislature for the first time. When VOA asked about one analyst's contention that it was a political earthquake, Monash University Asia scholar Bruce Jacobs had this to say.
Well, it's certainly a landslide victory. There's no question. It was a great rejection of the government, which had been in power since 2008. And this started during the elections of 2014, the local elections. But it really was a huge landslide victory for the opposition Democratic Progressive Party.
Shortly after results of the election were announced, China's Taiwan Affairs Office, which is tasked with managing relations with Taipei, said it would continue to oppose any Taiwan independence activities. A statement published by the state-run Xinhua News Agency said China's determination to protect its territory was hard as rock. Jacobs contends Taiwan, once known as Formosa, was never a possession of China. The Democratic candidates running for this year's U.S. presidential election agreed Sunday that the implementation of the nuclear deal with Iran was a good thing. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said more needs to happen before moving rapidly toward normalizing relations with Tehran. And Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who'd been gaining on Clinton in the polls in the past month, said the existence of a nuclear deal without war and the thawing relations between the U.S. and Iran are very positive. Get more news at our website at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's opposition leader is still hopeful of a peaceful resolution to the country's crisis.
The peace process stands today because all Burundians expect to have a peace. So if the current government of Burundi don't want to go in the negotiation, they will be forfeit to go in negotiation.
Jean Minani is the exiled leader of the opposition Front for Democracy in Burundi, or FRUDEBO. Nigeria's opposition PDP says allegations of corruption against some members are not directed at the party. And South Sudan's government denies rebel negotiators have been recalled from Juba because it is obstructing peace.
It is very clear that we are not obstructing the peace agreement, but we are actually improving on it. And if anybody doesn't want it to be improved, that will be up to him.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. Mozambican refugees are fleeing to Malawi in growing numbers, and America observed the birthday of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. today, Monday. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The exiled leader of the opposition Front for Democracy in Burundi, or FRUDEBO, says efforts towards a peaceful resolution of the Burundian crisis are not dead because the Burundian people want peace. Peace talks that were scheduled to resume on January 6 in Uganda's capital, Kampala, did not take place because the government of President Pierre Nkurunziza said it would not negotiate with certain opposition figures that it considers as coup plotters or sponsors of acts of terrorism. This comes after the UN human rights chief warned last week that the Burundian crisis was increasingly taking on an ethnic dimension similar to the situation that preceded the 1994 Rwanda genocide. FRUDEBO leader Jean Minani says President Nkurunziza does not want to negotiate because he is the cause of the crisis that the country is experiencing today.
The peace process can't be dead because all Burundians expect to have a peace. So if the current government of Nkurunziza don't want to go in the negotiation, they will be forced to go in negotiation. So we can say that the process is dead because all Burundians need peace and they can't accept that the process is dead.
The last peace talks were supposed to take place on January 6th. First of all, the government said it cannot talk with some of you in the opposition because you are coup plotters. You do not have the concern of the Burundian people in mind. So are you a coup plotter?
When Mr. Pierre Nkurunziza negotiated in the behalf on Cindy Diff today, he was condemned by Diff. So we accept to negotiate for him. He forget very soon which is his position when he negotiates. This is a joking. It is a lying. He knows that if you have to negotiate, we don't negotiate with your friend. We negotiate with enemy, your adversary. It is because he has nothing to say to the people. He is a government who kills people. He is afraid to come with all the people, with international community, with everyone, to talk with us, because they have nothing to talk. Nkurunziza is the cause of the crisis of Burundi. He is the cause of the killing of the people of Burundi. Now, he can come to talk with us because he knows that he can have anything to talk.
So are you hopeful that there will be peace, that the situation in Burundi can be resolved through a peaceful means?
Yes, I am optimist because all the problem is one person. No one can accept that one person can be a problem of all the people. If he don't come, we'll continue the negotiation without him. We'll continue to make peace without him. I believe Burundian people need peace. And we can't accept that only one person can say, I don't accept negotiation. To our side, we say, accept to negotiate with him, even if he is a killer.
Jaminani is the exiled leader of the opposition Front for Democracy in Burundi, or FRDEBU. He was speaking with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. South Sudan's government has denied rebel negotiators have been recalled from Juba because the government is not implementing last August's peace agreement. Former vice president and rebel leader Riek Machar late last week recalled the leadership of its negotiating team after accusing the government of hindering the peace process by the government's creation of 28 states. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwee says the government is not obstructing the implementation of the peace agreement, but rather it is improving on implementing the agreement.
The question of the 28 states is what we have been discussing, and the establishment of the transitional government of national unity. It is very clear that we are not obstructing the peace agreement, but we are actually improving on it. And if anybody doesn't want it to be improved, that will be up to him. It is for us to go to the people and ask them. If the people tell us that we don't want it that way, then we will conform. So up to now, we are still discussing. And the SPLMA delegation or advance team, not the whole of advance team, but the leadership of the advance team decided to go to Pagag for further consultation. You need to differentiate between recalling and going for consultation. They are going for consultation. They will start off on Tuesday and they will come back on Thursday. If they have been recalled, will they take all these people? And if they have been recalled, then the whole team is supposed to go. So you need to differentiate between being recalled and the leadership of the advance team going for further consultation.
When you say you have been discussing, what are you discussing? Are you considering to rescind it, to withdraw it?
What we have agreed last time in the last meeting of GEMET, we had agreed that the transitional government of national unity should be set up and that we should not wait for the constitution. The SPLMAIO inform us that they will not be ready for the establishment of the transitional government of national unity except after the adoption of the constitution. And we decided that because we have come to realize that the task, the NCAC, the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, was behind schedule and it will delay the process. So we decided to do without the constitution and we continue to operate in accordance with the provisions of the agreement until that time when the constitution is in place. The IO now has decided that no transitional government of national unity will be established before the adoption of the constitution. Of course, as a government, there is nothing we can do. We cannot force a horse to drink water if we have taken it to the river.
Mr. Minister, is your government hindering the implementation of the peace process? Because it seems that you have taken actions that the opposition consider to be hindering the peace process. For example, the registration of the SPLM party as a political party. Don't you think that is something that you should have done after the process is set up?
The fact that the SPLM as a political party has registered has nothing to do with the implementation of the agreement. If the Political Parties Act is amended, we will conform in accordance with the amendment. But as long as the agreement is there and the laws are there, there is nothing that stops the government or that stops the SPLM from conforming with the provisions of the law.
Michael Makwee is South Sudan's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today's Monday, January 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Let's send a shout-out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bon County, Central Liberia, and Brela FM in Nigeria. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is denying that the party has thrown its national publicity secretary under the bus in the face of President Muhammadu Buhari's war on corruption. Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, EFCC, arrested and charged PDP spokesman Olisa Metu with 7 counts of corruption. Mr. Mattu is accused of receiving 400 million naira, about 208 million US dollars, from what a court called illegal activity of former National Security Advisor Mohamed Sambo Dasuki and depositing that money into his personal account. But Abdullahi Jallo, Deputy National Spokesman of the PDP, says the party cannot take responsibility for the allegation against Mr. Mattu and others because whatever they are alleged to have done was done in their own volition.
You see, John Burton, let the court state a state. There is money allotted to purchase arms to buy Boko Haram, which is an act of the National Assembly. And then instead of the money to be used properly for the purpose the money has been voted, so there is an allegation that the Office of the National Security Advisor used that money to distribute it to some people based on their presentation of their companies to use that money for their own purpose only. So there is an allegation by EFCC that out of this money, Oli Sametu has collected 400 million. Our PDP Board of Trustees Chairman, Dr. Bello, has collected 600 million. Our former Board of Trustees Chairman, Tony Anin, has collected 262 million. So there are a lot of money collected indiscriminately without the party knowing. What I have said in one of my press briefings is we should distinguish the company which Oli Sametu collected money, that is Destra Investment Limited, which PDP as a party. PDP has no hand as a party. It has not sent Olisa or Dr. Bello or any other person to go and collect money on its behalf because PDP is a political party. It doesn't do contract. If any money is to be given to PDP, it must go to the account of PDP.
The Buhari administration is saying that it's on a corruption hunt to recover stolen government money, and it blames the Goodluck Jonathan administration. But Mattu was speaking for the party.
You see, let me just correct you on this. If you are, as a person who is supporting PDP, you face a certain problem with the government in terms of politics, i.e. you have expressed your right against some of the policies of the government, of Buhari administration, and then you have been picked up, party will go and defend you. But this one, I have company. I went and collect some money on behalf of my company to do a particular job. And then instead of doing that job, I cornered that money. What does the party got to do with that? The party will not interfere into it because it is between that person who gives you money and your own company. It's a private affair.
So what do you say to people who say, is the PDP trying to throw Mattu and the others under the bus?
You see, as I told you, I am working under Oli Sametu. If there is anybody that knows that that money is collected, I am his deputy. Let us call a spade a spade. Now you are working in DOA. You went and do, God forbid, some dubious act somewhere on your own personal violation. Would DOA go and say, it is in the process of working for DOA that we should defend him? Nobody is throwing Oli Sametu or any other person because he's in trouble. That trouble he enters, prima facie, it is his own between him and the office of the NSA and the federal government and the EFCC. PDP has no hand in it.
Abdullahi Jallo is the deputy national spokesman of Nigeria's opposition People's Democratic Party. He was speaking with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The UN Refugee Agency says growing numbers of Mozambicans fleeing fighting between Renamo rebels and government forces are seeking asylum in neighboring Malawi. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports an almost unstoppable flow of refugees from Mozambique is crossing over the border into Malawi. The agency says its staff in the village of Kapise, about 100 kilometers south of the capital, Lilongwe, so far has registered nearly 1,300 new arrivals, with more than 900 people waiting to be recorded. It says another 400 people have arrived in 16 other villages. UNHCR spokeswoman Karen De Gruel says most of the refugees are women and children who come from Tete province in Mozambique. She says the refugees report fighting between the opposition RENAMO and government forces is making life impossible in their home villages.
Refugee women told a UNHCR protection officer how their homes were burned down with one elderly lady left inside to die. They say that government forces are attacking villages believed to be harboring opposition forces and opposition members. We have not been able, however, to confirm the accuracy of these allegations. Some parents also stated that they've been separated from their children during flight.
De Gruel says the UNHCR and government authorities in Malawi believe the fighting in Mozambique, which broke out in February last year, would be temporary. Therefore, she says, agreements were made with the national authorities for local communities to host some 700 Mozambican refugees who had arrived in mid-2015.
In the past few weeks, however, the situation has changed and more people are crossing into Malawi, and we have reports that more people are coming. Malaria is a major concern as there are not enough mosquito nets, and the number of patients seen daily has increased from 70 to 250 people.
De Gruel says several UN aid agencies, as well as the charity Doctors Without Borders, are in hand to help the refugees with food, non-food items, and medical relief. She says the government of Malawi is considering reopening Luani refugee camp, which previously hosted refugees from Mozambique's long-running civil war. That war, which was waged between 1977 and 1992, prompted more than 1 million Mozambicans to flee to Malawi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Americans commemorating today as a national holiday in honor of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. The success of the American civil rights movement and the fight for racial equality in the United States is a testament to millions of African Americans who fought against racial discrimination in the 1960s. Another major factor was the strategy of protesting for equal rights without using violence. Civil rights leader Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. championed this strategy as an alternative to armed uprising. Viewer's Chris Simpkins has more on King's nonviolence strategy.
Reverend Martin Luther King's nonviolent movement was inspired by the teachings of Indian leader Mahatma Gandhi. Throughout the South, King put the spotlight on prejudice.
Mississippi is a state that has consistently resisted any move to rid itself of racism.
Led by King, millions of blacks took to the streets for peaceful protest, as well as civil disobedience actions and economic boycotts.
You've got to keep the white and the black separate.
The nonviolent movement was tested in places like Birmingham, Alabama. William Bell is the city's current mayor.
During that period of time, you had people who were being murdered, homes being bombed, churches being bombed, and there was a sense that nothing would ever change here in Birmingham or the South. There was a sense that evil would prevail.
In 1965, a march for voting rights in Selma, Alabama, went down in history as Bloody Sunday. Congressman John Lewis led the march.
They came toward us, beating us with nightsticks, tramping us with horses, releasing the tear gas. I was hit in the head by a state trooper with a nightstick. I had a concussion at the bridge. I thought I was going to die.
Andrew Young, one of King's closest aides, called for calm against a backdrop of outrage.
And if we had started guerrilla warfare in America's cities, if we had given in to terrorism, we could not have won. But America could not have survived.
In Birmingham, images of police using attack dogs and fire hoses to disperse protesting school children were broadcast around the world. Attorney Richard Cohen on the impact of those pictures.
The violence was being perpetrated by the oppressors, not the oppressed. And that was an incredibly powerful message, an incredibly important tool during the movement.
In August 1963, thousands of African Americans and whites gathered for the March on Washington. It was peaceful with no arrests. just weeks after the March on Washington, tragedy struck in Birmingham after a bomb exploded beneath the 16th Street Baptist Church during Sunday school classes. Four young girls were killed and 23 others injured. It was an awful blow for Dr. King and the civil rights movement. Shirley Gavin Floyd, a friend of one of the victims, was traumatized by the hate killings.
Well, I was scared to look at a white person. I was scared to go anywhere I thought a white person was, because I really believed that that could easily happen to me.
Many blacks wanted to retaliate, among them Congressman Bobby Rush, who in the 1960s was a member of the militant group known as the Black Panthers.
I was not a supporter of Dr. King. I thought that Dr. King was too milquetoast, too passive, and I didn't understand the power of nonviolence. And so I didn't adhere to his philosophy and turned the other cheek.
Ben Jealous, president of the nation's oldest civil rights organization, says the nonviolent campaign won American hearts and minds.
The movement was moving towards a crescendo that we would see in 64 and 65 when landmark civil rights legislation was passed.
Historians say despite the setbacks, the nonviolent movement spurred lasting results towards providing equal rights and freedom for all Americans. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Montgomery, Alabama.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Striker Yazid Emane Atuba scored through a first-half free kick to hand Cameroon a 1-0 victory over Angola in an Orange African Nations Championship tie in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of the Rwanda capital Kigali on Sunday. Earlier on at the same venue, Guy Lucidiso, Heritier Luvumba and Meshack Elia each found the back of the net as the Democratic Republic of Congo outplayed Ethiopia 3-0 in the other Group B tie. On Saturday, defender Emery Baisenga scored to enable hosts Rwanda edge Ivory Coast 1-0 in the tournament opener before Gabon and Morocco played to a scoreless draw. Consequently, Rwanda head the Group A with 3 points. Today, Monday, attention returns to the capital, Kigali, for Group C action, where Tunisia take on Guinea before Nigeria and Niger face off. Turning to athletics, Kenya's Gideon Kipketer clocked 2 hours, 8 minutes and 35 seconds to win the Standard Chartered Mumbai Marathon in India on Sunday. Meanwhile, Ethiopian Shuka Genemo covered the distance in 2 hours, 27 minutes and 50 seconds to claim victory in the women's race. Elsewhere, Ethiopians Gedo Burka and Burka Tiayit Gedegefa Eshetu were crowned winners at the Chevron Houston Marathon in Texas State, United States of America on Sunday. Burka won the men's race in 2 hours, 10 minutes and 55 seconds, while Eshetu prevailed in the women's event in 2 hours, 26 minutes and 7 seconds. In Spain, Ethiopian Tamirat Tola and Kenyan Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon triumphed in the men's and women's races, respectively, at the IAAF cross-country permit meet in Seville on Sunday. Finally, World Athletics Championship gold medalists stole the limelight at Kenya's Sports Personality of the Year Award in Nairobi on Friday. World Javelin champion Julius Yego was crowned Male Sports Personality of the Year, as World 3,000-meter steeplechase champion Hyvin Kiyeng was named Female Sports Personality of the Year. World Youth 1,500-meter champion Kumari Taki and World Youth 2,000-meter steeplechase champion Agnes Tirop bagged the Most Promising Boy and the Most Promising Girl awards, respectively. The Kenya Volleyball Federation clinched the Best Federation of the Year award. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The White House issued a sharply worded statement on Sunday saying it condemns in the strongest terms attacks in the capital of Burkina Faso that killed at least 29 people. And that's it for this Monday, January 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Batty in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Next on Let's Talk. School life. How did it shape your life and affect your personality? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing school life. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk. comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou will discuss the health aspects of refugees and internally displaced people with Mark Yurnell, Senior Advocate Refugee International. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voa.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program.